Judiciary Committee in the order, and look how fast they react. Thank you so much. Fantastic help we get, so I appreciate that. We are on the record at 1:37 in the afternoon of Wednesday, March 23rd, 2011. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Paskman is here, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, myself, Senator French. We're here to do board confirmations today. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so we'll just go ahead and get started. We're going to start with the Police Standards Council, and I understand that Mark Mew, who had thought that he would not be able to make it today, is in fact able. Mr. Mew, are you on the line? Mark Mew. Okay, let's just give him a minute.
Hello?
Mark Mew.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about your interest in the Police Standards Council.
Okay, well, this is Mark Mew calling. Last name is M-E-W. I'm the chief at Anchorage Police Department.
And go ahead. It sounded like he was in mid-word.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, we sure can.
Okay. So this is Mark Mew with Anchorage Police Department, and I've been here at the APD for about 14 months after having retired in 2003 from this department. I was gone at the school district for about 6.5 years and came back as chief of police. At that time, the governor appointed me to fill a term in the Alaska Police Standards Council, and I guess I must be up for the beginning of a new term now, and that's why I'm here before you. The APSC has about 11 members, I think. It could be 13, right around in there. Some of them are from small departments. Some are from other agencies besides police departments. Some are from the public at large. And generally, I think the APSC wants to have a representative from a larger city on the panel, and I think that is part of why I was asked to participate. I think it's important for Anchorage to have representation on the council. The council sets standards for training and so forth, but it also reviews certification and decertification issues. Being a larger department in the state, although I think we're a very professional department and have really high standards at our end, we have more people, which means we have more certification issues, more people that leave our employment under unpleasant circumstances. And so I think it's important for us to help ensure that that we have good statewide standards and that Anchorage is able to help the other departments kind of set common goals for standards for police conduct and so forth across the state. And we do generate a lot of that business, and so we have a vested interest, of course, in seeing our cases move through too, although obviously I abstain from votes on my own people, but it's we do move some volume through the council, and I think the council would like to have our input, and I'm interested in seeing those standards maintained and quite interested in serving the state and the different departments in establishing and maintaining standards. So that's my interest in being on the council.
Thank you, Mr. Mew. Just for the record, there are 13 members on the Police Standards Council, 11 of whom are appointed by the governor and come through for confirmation. The Standards Council also includes the Commissioner of Corrections and the Commissioner of Public Safety. Those two, of course, get confirmed in separate proceedings. So we don't confirm them onto the council, but we do confirm the other 11 members. And it looks to me like you were named to the council practically a year ago, just as the session was ending last year, and you've been serving for a year essentially without having gone through this confirmation process. Does that seem right?
That's correct, and I don't know if something got skipped before or if the term started over again and it just got realized that we hadn't done confirmations. I don't know how that came about, but it's correct that I've been helping the council now for about a year, attended a couple of sessions. They've only had two sessions where we've met, a couple times on the phone. So I have been involved, but this is the first time I've been up for confirmation.
Sure, and maybe you can just tell us, to the extent that you can, you know, sort of compare and contrast the disciplinary processes of you acting as police chief over your officers and then you as a member of the Police Standards Council.
Well, what would normally happen in the case of if we have a disciplinary matter, usually what it is the typical scenario is we've decided to terminate an officer for some misconduct. And then we fill out paperwork and notify the APSC that this person's no longer employed as an officer. We check a box if we think that the conduct was bad enough that they should be decertified. Typically, we will check that box. If it's so bad that we are terminating an officer, typically we think that he should probably also be, he or she should be decertified. So then the council gets that paperwork and they conduct a preliminary investigation to see if they agree with our recommendation. The employee or the former employee has an opportunity to relinquish his certificate voluntarily, or he may ask to have the case heard, in which case our department would be asked to send our file down, our internal affairs file or police reports, or probably a combination of both, to support our contention that the conduct was serious enough to warrant decertification. At that point, if I'm a council member, I'm not going to vote because it's my own employee and I have a vested interest in it, so I would recuse myself from the vote. So, but my job as a chief would be, whether I was on the council or not, would be to send that information to the council and provide anything the council wanted in order to make its evaluation. Then as a member of the council, what I would do is I'd be also looking at the decertification requests that are coming in from other departments, the Alaska State Troopers or Fairbanks or Juneau or whatever. And we would look into those departments' requests for decertification, and we would vote either to decertify or no, we don't think the certification should be pulled, and the officer is free to go to a different department and maintain a certification. The certification would hold for about a year or so, and then it would go into an inactive phase if the person did not work in law enforcement.
Sure. Thank you. Two things. One, let's welcome Senator Coghill to the committee. He arrived a few minutes ago. And Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. You're welcome to the committee. Good to hear from you. Could you talk a little bit about the Rollins case? And I don't want to assign blame. If most of the incidents did happen in my district, I know there was a lot of concern about, certainly by the women in my district, about it. Do you feel that enough was done at APD to discourage these sort of activities? Have you changed any of the protocols since this occurred, or are you planning on changing anything? You just talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I can. How much I say, can you, Senator, can you tell me who all is listening in right now?
Chief, this is a public hearing. There's not many people in the room, but yeah, there's a press guy saying, "Oh no, don't mention my name."
Okay,
you're on the record in public.
Okay, the Rollins affair is, you know, it's a horrible tragedy for the community and for this department. That's the first thing. We have moved to decertify Rollins. Rollins is a pending case at the APSC right now, and they have been they have kept that case on hold. The two sessions I've been at, they just update everybody that it's still on hold. I think now that the case is resolved, the APSC will probably deal with it in its May meeting. So that decertification is going down its path now. This Rollins matter, I'm finding out now, after I came back to the APD, I started learning more about it. Of course, I read the papers when I was employed at the school district and the news, you know, whatever the public knew from reading the newspapers. Having gotten back to the police department, I learned more of the history of how this came about and the history of the case. The case has roots that go back to shortly after I left in 2003. I think we have said publicly already that there was some conduct early on that that we didn't like, that we felt was incorrect, but we could not make a criminal case out of it, that there was always consensual relationships that were occurring. He was disciplined for that. In public, I'm not allowed to talk about the level of discipline that we had there, but I can tell you that looking at the discipline we've done in other cases, I personally am, I'm not sure that I would have decided it the way it was decided had I been the decision maker at the time. But I can't change that part of it. We get into the second round of his conduct, which was criminal. As you know, I think six victims were identified in that case. We've got convictions on five of the six victims. That was entirely criminal conduct, and of course that's what landed him in jail and got him fired and has caused his certification to get put up for revocation. Certainly there are some things we are doing different here at the APD, and I'm not sure that I'm done identifying things either. But for sure some of the things we have done is we've improved the sergeant officer ratio here. We're going to make promotions. I'm probably going to announce them on Friday. That will give us enough sergeants in patrol that we can put together actual squads where the same people work for the same sergeants with the same days off, so we don't have people working for different sergeants on their different days so that we lose track. It's easy for things to fall through the cracks. We'll be able to provide better and more consistent supervision of our people. We've made some differences in how we supervise the overtime details. A lot of Rollins' conduct, at least in the second go-around, the cases that generated the criminal convictions, a lot of that was done on overtime details where an officer is out working kind of on their own doing a DWI detail or something of that nature, and they don't fit into the regular supervisory structure of the shifts. We've closed that loop. We were supervising overtime details much closer than we were in previous year, throughout the history of our department until about a year ago. So that's another change that we've made. We're also introducing some IA software, internal affairs software, right now that tracks conduct and allegations so that the computer recommends to us when it's seen certain threshold levels of allegations, even if we might, as humans, have not have noticed it because the person's moved around in their career or between the shifts and so forth. The computer tells us when somebody's got so many allegations of a certain kind of conduct. We set those parameters. So it's kind of an early warning system that helps us get on the front end of things and try and nip them in the bud. Then, of course, we're considering this whole camera routine, which would cover substations. That's one of the suggestions we're hearing. We're trying to roll that into to our plans for video generally, whether that's in-car video or on-body video or how we work that into building video. You know, we're looking at that as well.
Thank you, Chief. Further questions from members of the committee? Don't hear see any. Again, I'll just point out for the record that Mr. Mew has over 20 years of service at APD, attended the FBI Academy at Quantico, and has a bachelor's degree in anthropology. He seems highly qualified to serve on the Police Standards Council. Is there a motion? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, I would agree, Mr. Chair, and I would move that this committee move the nomination of Mr. Mew onto the full body for a vote.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations and thank you, Chief, again for appearing. Your name will be presented to the entire legislature in joint session before this session comes to a conclusion.
Well, thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate it. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate the honor, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to help out to serve on the council.
Excellent. Have a good day.
Thanks. Do you want me to sign off, or
you can sign off. Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate your support.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Let's stay on the Police Standards Council and turn now to Richard Burton. Richard Burton, if you can hear me, go ahead and put yourself on the record. Tell us your name and affiliation, if any, and your interest in serving on the Police Standards Council.
I'm here. There was an interference as part of which I didn't hear everything you said.
Okay, I'll just I'll start again. Go ahead and state your name and affiliation, if any, and tell us about your interest in continuing to serve on the Police Standards Council.
All right, my name is Richard Burton. My affiliation is, I guess, I'm retired as Commissioner of Public Safety in 1995. My interest in the council goes back to prior to having a police standards legislation. Myself and an individual some of you may know, Pat Wellington, when I was a captain of troopers and Pat was the chief in Juneau, and we were representing the Alaska Chiefs of Police Association, and some of us were very concerned. We had no standards in Alaska. I started in law enforcement in territorial days, and I remember how I got hired. Went to work that night, and my partner had been hired the same day, and we didn't even know which end of town was it which or anything else. Absolutely no training. Luckily, we learned on the fly and did get some training and worked for some very good people at the time. So we'd always been concerned about that because I had the opportunity over the years to see people be hired, and the only kind of background he did was take a set of fingerprints, send them to the FBI at Washington, D.C. by mail, and maybe in 6 months you'd get a response back. We found out that over periods of time, and I'd worked with people who were wanted for various types of manslaughter or burglary or robbery in California or somewhere, and they'd worked for 4 or 5 months, and I'd worked with them, and then they were gone. In fact, some of you, probably most of you don't know that the guy was called the Great Imposter. It was a movie made about years ago. Worked up here, I think he was in Cake or one of those places for a while as police chief. So that always kind of bothered us. When I got an opportunity to be in a position, and I had some very good friends in the legislature that felt the same way we did at the time, we looked at other states and started deciding that we needed to do something about training and good backgrounds, and so we got what ended up being Senate Bill 1 that year. I think it was 1971. So I've been associated with this as from that standpoint, and then professionally working as a police chief. I've worked in the federal level of government, worked with the Justice Department, police advisor in Vietnam. You probably have my resume there. And I've seen how law enforcement operates in different places besides just in Alaska or small town Alaska. And some of the biggest things that interest I have in keeping following this is the training. The one size doesn't fit all, and one of the biggest problems we still have is the bush and the rural areas for law enforcement and adequate training. I'm glad to see that the current commissioner and the governor have put some effort into trying to get some of the positions filled, because we used to have a lot more than we have now, and we had a better training. But I'm glad to see that they're graduating people from there. That's a big concern. Discipline and misconduct is one thing, and of course a lot of emphasis gets placed on that, and as it should be. And for some reason I noticed over the last 15, 20 years I've been a consultant that gets called in when I guess the best thing is say when police departments break down, and discipline is very important, but it usually comes from bad hiring, lack of doing an adequate background, the lack of doing good psych testing, and training. I think an emphasis besides just the basic man on the street police officer, there needs to be more emphasis, and there is getting to be, on training people in supervision and management. And that's just my interest, is being there and bring whatever I can bring from a historic perspective, because as I've told them at a couple meetings, no matter how many times you reinvent the wheel, it always comes out round. So there's no need in trying to do things that didn't work in the past. And I think that I've had an influence in helping to do some of that and guiding some of the things that need to be done. In fact, the Police Standards Council, some of you have probably been approached by people that I know that think that it should be broadened out more than it was. It started out just police officers, then corrections, and you know, people want to get in, and I have no problem with that. And it's gotten to the point where there are so many things that at one time the troopers did investigate the spills up at Prudhoe Bay, and I assigned people to natural resources, or and then the things that came along like revenue sharing and permanent fund dividend and other things, of different kinds of frauds and crimes. It doesn't take a uniform police officer with a gun on his hip, but it does take somebody with training, law enforcement. We've had some of those discussions with the council now about that, that I, for one, see that maybe the police standards statute legislation instead of standards, Alaska Police Standards Council could be the Alaska Law Enforcement Training Council and bring these others in. Everybody can't be a uniform or should be a uniform police officer necessarily, but there are need for people in checking some of the ones that are doing enforcement for the lack of paying child support. And some of those kind of things can get worthy. You have to get policemen to go with them. I think we need to take a look at maybe the statute catching up with the times. But, so anyway, that's basically long-winded version of my interest in it.
Mr. Burton, thank you for that statement, and I'll just say for myself, I don't know that I've come across a person who has a broader and deeper resume in public safety here in the state or anywhere else. I'll just point out for the committee members or anyone else who's listening that you joined the Alaska State Troopers in 1959. You have twice been commissioner of the Department of Public Safety from 1975 to 79, again from 1991 to 1995. You have advised the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands on public safety. You are the chief of police for the city and borough of Juneau. You have visited Russia in conjunction with your interest in public safety, and you were a guest of the Turkish government at an international meeting of 31 countries to discuss international extraditions, drug trafficking, and et cetera. It's a remarkable resume. I just want to thank you for continuing to serve.
It's been a good life.
Other comments or questions? I think the committee is just very happy to have you in front of us. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Richard, for your lifelong service in Alaska. One of the things that we've dealt with on the Judiciary Committee often is the discretionary problem of misdemeanors in Alaska. And I think that goes to some of the questions on what we do in rural Alaska especially, but urban Alaska is not exempt. And I think the police officers end up with an issue of discretion, and it's easier to go towards the felons. And we have passed laws here that have tried to get tough on crime in some areas, but felonies seem to always be the tool. From the police standards perspective, is that a discretionary problem, or is that something that we have handed off to them? It'd be interesting to hear from your perspective.
Well, I haven't been out there in a while. Well, we should understand that, but it is a discretionary problem. It also depends on the Department of Law, who has to, of course, prosecute cases. And I worked out there in the days when they had the old town and village magistrates, and justice was pretty much kept local unless it was really a very serious felony. And justice was like the Nora Gwynns and people those days from Bethel, and the people have gone down in history. They no longer do that. And for some reason, I think that's the biggest impact. You can't just have people that can arrest somebody. I think they should come, my personal feeling is that they should come back with, not, don't call them a tribal court, but a village court, and give them a certain level of jurisdiction to handle the kids that are raised in Cane, or the fights and the odds and ends that put misdemeanors, and let people have some say over the conduct in their own community And if it rises to the level of a homicide or something serious in the state, it would, in my opinion, would make things run a lot smoother and would certainly be a lot more efficient as far as money goes. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
That's good. I think the local magistrates or however we can get a community accountability together is a good answer and something I'll ponder deeply because we're trying to find solutions to that. Thank you.
I'd be happy to discuss it with you a little more later on because I, you know, if I lived in a community of 400 or 500 people, I'd certainly want to have some local say over conduct in that there. And I think it lends itself to addressing some of the issues and concerns that people have with over sovereignty, to be frankly with you. I think that would help go a long ways towards helping some of those issues.
I would be interested in further conversation with you. I would appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't see any further questions from Mr. Burton. I'd solicit a motion at this point. Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we forward Mr. Burton's name on to the full body for consideration.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none. Mr. Burton, congratulations. Your name will go on to a joint session of both the House and the Senate for consideration of this appointment. I appreciate, again, your being here, and you can sign off now, sir. Thank you.
I have one question.
Sure.
What's the date of my appointment? I know what you went through with Mark, and I'm not sure when my appointment started either.
The paperwork I have, sir, indicates that you were, it was last year. Just like Mr. Mew, your appointment began, this most recent cycle began on the 2nd of April, 2010, and each time you're appointed, you have to be reconfirmed, and that session ended without you coming before us, so we're getting to you about a year late.
That's okay, fine.
Yep.
That's what I want to know. Thank
yep,
you.
Yep, there you
Thank
go.
Thank you very much. Good
yes,
for
sir.
Listening.
Yep, take care. Very good. Then we will turn now to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Nora Barlow. Nora Barlow, you are on the off-nets. Go ahead and put yourself on the record, state your name and affiliation, if any, and your interest in serving on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board.
Okay. My name is Nora Barlow, and professionally, I'm a member with the law firm of Delisio Moran, Garrity & Zobel, and I have been serving on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board now for a year. I took over the position that's designated for an attorney when Leroy Barker retired, and so I filled him in for him for the last year, and I'm interested in continuing to work with the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I didn't really know what I was getting into when I signed up for this, and I've been very pleased with the kind of service that I've been able to provide to the community by serving on the board, and I've enjoyed serving with my fellow members and would like to do that. I think it's important what we're doing, and it fits well with my background as a lawyer and my desire to provide service to the community. So pretty short and sweet.
Thank you, and just for what it's worth, Ms. Barlow and I are neighbors. She lives just around the corner from me, and we wave each other regularly when I'm out in the yard doing work. I'll just point out, and I'll thank you for having served as an assistant district attorney for 2 years doing prosecutions, and then again with OSPA doing environmental prosecutions. Since then, you've been in private practice, is that right?
That's correct.
And tell me, you joined the, you've been on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board for how long?
Just for 1 year.
I see. I see. And how often have you met?
Well, we've been meeting about once every 3 months. In fact, we have another meeting coming up this Sunday. It's about a day-long commitment. I think this Sunday we have over 100 claims that we're hearing. We also have come down to Juneau. The board comes down every year, the three members. To meet with the different legislators down there regarding the work that we've been doing and anything we see coming up in the future. So the time commitment is, in my mind, is not significant for, I think, the benefit that we're providing. So I've really enjoyed doing that.
And just from my own purposes, how long will you? How long will that meeting on Sunday last to process 100 different?
I'd say 8 hours.
Wow.
It's a day-long commitment.
Excellent. Thank you. That's all the questions I have. I'm looking to other members of the committee. Senator Cahill.
Mr. French, I just wanted to throw one other thing in that we are doing now. Through the we do also do emergency awards. So during meetings, we have the capacity to, without the board meeting, to award emergency funds up to $5,000. And our administrator, Kate Hudson, does a great job of getting the information to us, appropriately screening those cases. And I would say that, you know, we can get up to 20 or 30 of those during that interim period. And so so that's also some of the activity that we're participating in.
Thank you for that. And I'll just point out, Senator Cockell has a question, but I'll just point out to the committee that it's a small board of three members. One member must be a medical or osteopathic physician or a retired one, either active or retired, and one member must be an attorney, either active or retired. And Ms. Farrell, I take it you're filling the attorney position.
Yes, that's correct.
Senator Cockell, you have a question.
And thank you, and I've read the report, and I really do truly appreciate the work that you folks do. So thank you for serving. Since you have a new set of eyes from the kind of legal perspective, one of the things I'm always interested in is feedback to us on places where there are honest-to-goodness legal barriers of helping crime victims. And I don't know if you need to, if there's anything that you've seen, but I, for one, as a legislator, am always interested in those barriers because we have, we do laws down here that sometimes don't always mesh real well when it comes to issues like this. So if you've seen anything, I'm open to discussion. And if there's anything you think that the committee needs to know about, since it's a judiciary committee, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I think when we were down there, we had discussion with quite a few different legislatures about that. And you know, one of the discussion that's going on right now is whether or not the BCCB can be involved with the SART exams. You know, when you first start looking at things, and as a lawyer, I know this is the case, it seems like it's always a simple fix to a statute to be able perhaps to get authority to get involved in different things. And what we have found out since that time is that it's not a simple fix and that or a simple change. And, you know, I think that's going to be, I think there are a lot of people interested in that issue. Is there, if there's a way to centralize the SART SAME exams, and for anybody who's not aware of that, that's the basically the exam that occurs after there's been an allegation of sexual assault or sexual abuse. And, I'm not sure that there's a comprehensive, proposal that has been made in terms of the introduction of legislation at this time, but I think that may be down at some time in the future. I think that may happen. You know, interestingly for me, I think, you know, I'm involved as a lawyer. I get out and talk to a lot of different people, and I think that what struck me is not so much the legal issue in terms of how we fix this, but or how to help victims, but the implementation and the publicity of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I'll give you an example. I was in Fairbanks doing a deposition, and I was talking to the court reporter, and she was giving me a ride to the airport, which is so Fairbanks that the court reporter would do that for me. And we were chatting, and she mentioned that her husband, soon-to-be ex-husband, was in jail, and that she had moved, and I asked, and not trying to imposed, but asked if domestic violence had been involved, and she indicated that it had been. And even though she was involved with the criminal justice system, nobody had told her about the Violent Crimes Compensation Board and the ability to receive funds. And so I was able to give her that information, and she was following up with me later and let me know she was applying for it. So I think one of the biggest issues and hurdles is really getting you know, getting the notoriety or the publicity or just the information out there about what BCCB can do for people. And I'm finding that the more and more I talk to people, it's hard to get the information out to the victims of violent crime. So I'm not sure there's a legal fix to that, but right now, in my mind, I think information is the biggest hurdle or the lack thereof. And that's not meant to criticize. I don't think that's the point of what I'm saying is that it's hard to distribute the information and get it to the right people, and I think everybody's trying to. It's just a matter of, I'm not sure what the solution is, but I think that's the biggest hurdle at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, interesting. We live in the information age, and yet information is sometimes the hardest to get to. But I'll keep that in mind as we move along.
I appreciate you asking the question. That's a fascinating anecdote about, just trying to get the word out about some basic state functions. I don't see any further questions for Ms. Barlow. Motion. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Ms. Barlow is eminently qualified. I would move that we forward her name on to the full body for consideration.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations and thanks again, Ms. Barlow. Your name will be put forward to the full legislature, the House and Senate, in joint session for a vote on your confirmation before the end of this session.
Okay. Thank you, Senator French.
Wonderful.
Okay.
With that, we will now turn to the Judicial Conduct Commission and Amy Demboski. Ms. Demboski, if you are on the line, please put yourself on the record and tell us about yourself and your interest in serving on this commission.
Great. Well, good afternoon, Senator French and members of the committee. My name is Amy Demboski. I have been a resident of Alaska since 1989. I currently live in Chugiak with my husband and two children. And I have, for the last 20 years, been involved in public service in one way or another. And this year I had, actually it was the end of last year, I had decided I wanted to serve on a board or commission. I wanted to get a little more involved in the community. And so I put my name in for this commission, and I was thrilled to be selected.
Excellent. And have you attended any meetings of the Judicial Conduct Commission?
I have. I attended the last meeting they had was the last day of February. It was actually the day before my term started, so I was only able to attend the public portion of the meeting, but I did get to meet with the commissioners, and prior to that, I had spent a couple hours with the executive director just going over the types of cases and stuff that the commission sees and the protocols and those types of things. So, yeah, I got a little introduction to it.
Good. And have you served on other boards or commissions in the past?
I have not. This is my very first one.
Okay. I'll just point out for members of the committee that the Judicial Conduct Commission is made up of 9 members, 6 appointed by the governor, and then three public members who are not judges, 3 attorneys who practice law in Alaska for 10 years, and then there are 3 justices or judges who are elected by the justices and judges of state courts. So that's Ms. Demboski has stepped forward to fill one of the public and appointed positions. Questions for Ms. Demboski? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, just more of a curiosity than anything else. Just looking at your resume, it looks like you've been a dental assistant for a long time. And just curious what sort of piqued your interest in getting involved in the Judicial Conduct Commission.
Well, Senator Wilkowski, I actually, I have been dental assisting for about the last 15 years, but the last 5 years or so, I've been building and managing dental practices, so I haven't really been hands-on. But a few years ago, I did get a justice degree from UAA, as well as a history degree. So for many years, I thought I wanted to go into law enforcement, and as I got a little older, I realized that though I wanted to serve the public, I might be able to do it in a different capacity. And having smaller children, my children are older now, they're 14 and 11, it's a little easier for me to get involved. So the thing that really piqued my curiosity, all the law classes I took, all those different things, it fascinates me. I find it interesting, and I feel like I could be a benefit to the community in this position.
Senator Pascan.
Yes, what I was wondering, again, that the emphasis seemed to be more in the dental field, and I saw also that you had the degree in justice, but what do you expect or anticipate that you'll focus on accomplishing?
Well, I think it's about, even though I work in dental practices, I want to stress the fact that I was primarily in a management function. So the skills that I bring to the table are one of fair. I'm a fair person. I'm very pragmatic. So my job was to be a problem solver. It was to take in data, analyze it, and then come out with a common sense solution. I anticipate the cases that come before the Judicial Conduct Commission are very similar, though they might be a different content. You have to gather facts and make a fair assessment of a situation. In this particular instance, you actually have statutes and a code of conduct to refer back to see if, you know, somebody violated those statutes. So I really see this position as being one as an advocate for the state of Alaska, the people that live in the state of Alaska. I'm a public member, so I think I am not an attorney or a judge, but I do bring a common sense type of problem-solving skill set to the commission. So those are the types of, like I said, I think it mirrors a lot of different HR functions that I've been associated with in the past.
Senator Wilkowski. Yes,
and I appreciate you put your name forward, Amy. It's always good to know that there are volunteers out there who want to serve the state, and we are very reliant on volunteers. And are there particular instances that you've seen of judicial conduct that you thought should have been punished or that were punished that you thought maybe shouldn't have been punished?
Senator Wilkowski, I think actually I come to the commission with an unbiased view either way. I don't know any judges in this town or in the state for that matter. I think generally the judges that serve our state are public servants that are good people that are trying to do the best they can. I don't have an axe to grind. I'm not a cynic. I wouldn't say. I generally think people are good. However, I do think there are occasions when people act either inappropriately or violate law. And in those situations, I absolutely believe in accountability. So I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't say I have an opinion either way. I really haven't been immersed in the legal system here in Alaska, so I'm not swayed one way or another.
And Ms. Demoski, don't take this the wrong way, but I'll just ask, have you had any contact that we should know about with the judicial system, family law, civil law, criminal law?
I'm a pretty open book. No, I have. The most contact I've had was with when I was going through my justice program. I went down and I observed some trials that were going on, and that was purely for class procedures. But I haven't. I'm a very novice when it comes to the legal system. I've never been in trouble with the law or anything of that nature.
Thank you very much. We do have two people who are signed up to testify. And we'll go ahead and hear from them, and I'll give you each 3 minutes to put your views on the record. Let's start with David Haig, who's in Soldotna. Mr. Haig.
My name's David Haig, and I represent myself and my family. I thank the Senate Judiciary Committee for the opportunity to speak today. Ms. Dombowski has stated that she applied to be a member of the Commission of Judicial Conduct because she's a public-minded individual with an interest in the law and as such wants to ensure fair and equitable treatment for all parties involved in court cases. Given this assurance on her part, I would hope that if evidence of malfeasance on the part of a judge, the Commission, or its sole investigator came to light, that she would follow up on this evidence and see that the matter is fully vetted and not swept under the carpet, especially if the information was forwarded to the commission by a superior court judge and was also provided to the ombudsman. I look forward to hearing her thoughts on this issue and trust that if she is confirmed, she will indeed do the right thing and not fall prey to the good old boy mentality of cronyism in the face of judicial corruption and investigatory negligence. Again, I'd like to thank you, the chair, and the committee members for taking my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Haig. Next up, we have Thomas Stepnoski, also from in Soldotna, wishing to testify. Mr. Stepnoski, go ahead and put yourself on the record, state your name and affiliation, if any, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Hello, my name is Tom Sapnowski. I reside in Kenai. Mr. Sembowski, I met you at the last Judicial Conduct Commission hearing that was prior to the day you were to be on a commission. So I didn't know much about you, but I listened to your confirmation hearing before the House, and I was impressed with what you had to say. As another member of the public, I see you're going to have a lot of weight on your shoulders along with the other two public members. And the one thing that I would like you to remember is always use your common sense. You said you would do that, and I found out throughout life that is the most important thing. So please look at everything with your eyes wide open and do your best. Thank you. And thank you to the commission.
Thank you, sir. That closes public testimony on this confirmation, and with that, I would solicit a motion.
Mr. Wilkowski. I would move that we forward the name of Ms. Domboski onto the full body for consideration.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, congratulations, Ms. Domboski. Your name will go on to a joint session of the House and the Senate for confirmation vote from the full body before this legislative session comes to a close. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
We now turn to the last person we have on the agenda, and that is Mr. Hayes, who has stepped forward to serve on the Judicial Council. Mr. Hayes, are you there?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Please go ahead and put yourself on the record, state your name and affiliation, if any, and your interest in serving on the Judicial Council.
Certainly. Can everybody hear me all right?
I believe we can.
My name is Don Hayes, and on graduating college in December of 1992, I made the decision to visit Alaska before I could begin my career or pursue other further education. And the reason for that is I wanted to get up here while I was young enough to climb up the mountains and raft the rivers, hunt the game, do that kind of stuff. Seeing the state from the backseat of a bus or from a cruise ship just didn't appeal to me. I wanted to see it young. On arriving, it wasn't long before I met my wife here in Valdez, and we settled down and began raising a family. So needless to say, I never returned to my home state. I've been working at the Valdez Marine Terminal for the oil pipeline since 1995 for various different contractors. Currently, I'm with CH2M Hill, and I've spent the past 5 years or so upgrading the fire protection system line-wide. I'm an electrical designer there. My experience with the courts has been brief and positive. We've had two adoptions, once before Judge Bolger and once before Judge Shally, and also one stint as a juror and one mandatory appearance for a speeding ticket. My interest in this position stems mostly from my degree in political science. While I chose not to go on to get a law degree, I certainly took several pre-law related classes, and attaining that degree was one of my options that I gave up when I came to visit Alaska. My schooling gave me a firm grasp of how the system is designed to work and why it's set up the way that it is. What I have to offer this commission is I've been a planning and zoning commissioner since 2004 here in Valdez. I'm currently in my second term as chairman. And in that position, I've participated in public hearings and taking testimony. I've weighed good arguments that come from all sides of an issue and chose the strongest. And I've participated plenty in public discussion. Another thing I have to offer is I ran a campaign for House District 12 last election. Certainly you guys understand, you've been through campaigns. You know what I'm talking about when I say you hear all kinds of ideas. I listened to and spoke with people from all over the state. District 12 is very large. From farmers to fishermen, Alaskans in oil, tourism, the military, education, mining. And I bring the breadth of that experience to the table. And finally, being a fox has given me a broader perspective than I ever had as a young man, the one that arrived here, fresh out of college and with a quick answer to everything. I believe I'm more thoughtful, I'm forward-looking, and inclusive more than I was at that time. I believe it's vitally important that Alaska has a slate of unbiased, thoughtful, and considerate judges And if confirmed, that's what I promise to offer.
Mr. Hayes, thank you. Good opening statement. I'll point out for the committee that the Judicial Council is made up of 7 members, each appointed to a term of 6 years. There are 3 non-attorney members appointed by the governor with regard to area representation and without regard to political affiliation, 3 attorneys appointed by the Bar Association, and the Chief Justice. Only the non-attorney members appear before us for confirmation. And just to let the committee members know, I've also, Mr. Larry Cohn is on the line from the Judicial Council, because I want to ask him about the area representation issue. I don't know that Mr. Hayes is qualified or the person really to inquire about with respect to that, but it concerns me about this nomination. The person going off the committee, the council, I'm sorry, is a Ketchikan person, I believe, or a Southeast person, and Ketchikan person. Mr. Hayes, of course, is from Valdez. And I'll just ask an opening question and ask you whether you think our courts here in Alaska skew to the left, sort of on the liberal side, whether they skew to the right on the conservative side, or whether they're in the middle.
I think they do a pretty good job of representing Alaskans, and evidence of that is how few of them are ever voted off of the court when we get our chance to review them.
So you'd say they're, whichever way Alaska skews, that's kind of the way they skew as well. They're pretty much politically aligned with the rest of the state.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Other questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hayes, I never would have pronounced your name that way. I, for some reason, had in my mind it was Haas.
So. I was queued up ahead of time, so or I would have been wrong as well.
Give you credit on that. Do you have any opinion about, you know, one of the contentious issues over the years is how Alaska appoints its judges? And I'm just curious if you have any sort of opinion about how Alaska currently appoints its judges and whether or not you believe that process should be changed.
Well, I've read through the Constitutional Convention minutes regarding this issue, and I've come more and more to believe that this is a good way of appointing judges. I come from a state where judges are elected, and I never saw a problem with that. In the minutes, they suggested that there could be some political tampering through the election process, but I never saw that in Michigan where I was raised, so I wouldn't be opposed to changing that. I filled out an application for a questionnaire, during my campaign, where I said that I could support changing it to something similar to what the federal judges have to go through, where the president appoints from whomever he wants and then is confirmed by the Senate. I don't think that would be a bad way to do it either, but I'm certainly committed to working through the process as it is currently written in our Constitution.
Senator Wilkowski,
do you, if you are appointed to this position, do you have any intentions of trying to push through a change to the Constitution as to how we appoint our judges?
No, and that was not even in my mind at all when I signed up for this. And if it was, I really don't think this would be the appropriate place to do that. We'd have to go through, you know, the whole Constitutional Convention or the Constitutional Amendment process, which being on this commission probably wouldn't help at all.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Pascan.
I notice that you had a website that identified your core beliefs, and that was taken down recently. Can you comment upon that?
Yeah, I had a campaign website for the primary, and I was paying monthly, like $26 a month or something. So I shut that down in order to stop paying that so I could close out my APOC paperwork.
Part of the purpose is not to deny the public or the legislature access to that information as to your core beliefs?
No.
And with respect to the statement that you've made regarding potentially barring the judiciary from considering certain constitutional challenges, you've made comments upon that? Is that true?
I don't remember what you're referring to on that one. Was that in one of the questionnaires I filled out?
This is in your status as president of Eagle Forum Alaska.
With Eagle Forum, are you talking about the blog that Eagle Forum had up?
Are you president of Eagle Forum Alaska?
No, sir. I was until I took this position, and then I stepped down because I don't see that I have enough time to do both well.
Okay. Do you, in that forum, you identified the judiciary as an imperial judiciary, did you not?
I don't believe I did.
Do you advance that concept that was set forth in the blog while you were president of Eagle Forum Alaska?
I was only president for about 2 months, and I don't believe we updated the blog at all while I was president. How many of the posts to the blog have my name on them because I was the one that was posting comments that came in from the public? And the way it went was the president would vet the comments to make sure there wasn't, you know, cuss words or other, you know, violent statements and that type. And then she would forward them to me, and I posted them just to save her the time of having to do that. So there will be probably for about 2 years worth, just about every comment on there was posted by me. But you'll also see in there who actually wrote it would be in the post.
What role of the judiciary do you believe should be limited?
What role?
Yeah. In other words, there was comments on the Eagle Forum Alaska website that you were the president of that addressed, for example, barring the court from considering certain constitutional challenges. For example, dealing with the Pledge of Allegiance or the Ten Commandments or the definition of marriage.
I'm not sure, sir. I didn't write that, and I don't remember it at the time. I don't have that before me right now.
Do you believe that the posting on that blog where it calls the judiciary an imperial judiciary is accurate or inaccurate?
Well, I believe it can be. If it's allowed to be, it could be. But in Alaska, we have standards set up to where we the people review the judges on a periodic basis, depending on which level we're talking about. So in that sense, no, because we are able to vote them off of the bench. So we're still in charge, just like we are over our representatives.
Do you, you know, there's other citations in there on the blog about felony prosecutions of those engaged in extramarital activities, sexual activities or affairs. Do you recall that?
No.
Do you believe that there should be felony prosecution of people involved in extramarital affairs?
I don't see that would rise to the level of a felony.
Is it a crime?
I'm not really sure what the law is. It may be a crime. I'm not sure.
Do you believe
I
it should be?
I can't remember anybody ever being prosecuted of it.
Do you believe it should be a crime?
Yeah, I think it's very harmful to have extramarital affairs. It's harmful to children. It's harmful to the spouse who entered a legally binding agreement to marry the person that's, you know, cheating on them.
What about premarital affairs? Should that be a crime?
I'm not sure if it should. I think that would be up to the voters, certainly. If it came before me as a vote, I probably would vote for it. I'm not real certain about that. I can see where it could be a matter for the state to be involved with because of the spread of disease and the likelihood that it would cause violence. You know, I can see legitimate reasons to push that as a crime. But it's not something that I'm strongly convinced about, and it's certainly not something that I'm going to be able to push through this application. I'm not sure why this is even coming up.
Well, again, you are injecting yourself into the judicial system, and so I think it's fair inquiry for that purpose. And are there judicial opinion? In other words, if you have a motivation to limit who would be advanced to a judgeship, which in part that's a role of the Judicial Council, then your core beliefs and attitudes are important, don't you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But my own political views on any controversial issue seem like they would be irrelevant to me for two reasons. First, judges don't make the laws. You guys do. So whatever I said as a candidate for office applies to my political views and what I would like to see you guys do, or what I would do if I was in your seat. But now that I'm going for this commission, which is supposed to be a nonpartisan commission, you know, I'd be upset, and I hope you would too, if a judge took it upon himself to create the law, as if he were one of you. So I wouldn't want any of the judges to take my views and make them into law. And I hope you wouldn't want them to either. And then the second reason I don't think that my political views are too important to this is that it'd be a very convoluted process on this board to change the law. This would be a inconvenient way to do it. I'd be wasting my time to go on this commission to try and change the law. This isn't the place to change the law. The chance of a judge making a decision of any of these hot-button issues are slim. Their caseload's going to be dealing with traffic violations, domestic disputes, petty crime, small claims, you know, things of that nature. So the chance of any one judge that I've vetted actually taking a position on one single issue is pretty slim. So I'd be wasting my time to try and affect any of these issues through this process.
What do you believe the role of the judiciary is with respect to majority rule in general?
I think the judge should have a very deep respect for you as the legislature and for the laws that you pass. I think the judge should also have a deep respect for the Constitution and that they would uphold what was written in our Constitution. I believe judges should be fair. They should be balanced. They should take into effect what you guys intended by the law as well as what you have written, and that their own personal views should be set aside in any case.
Do you believe that government has the power to stop unhealthy choices in pursuit of happiness?
Stop unhealthy choices? I think it does that all the time. I'm forced to wear a seatbelt. You know, I'm told what's good to eat, what's bad to eat. It stops all kinds of unhealthy choices. I can't smoke until a certain age. I can't drink until a certain age. I'm not allowed to get myself drunk and drive down the street. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, in your website in the Hayes for House campaign, you have a specific section on pursuit of happiness. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Right, and in your comment regarding pursuit of happiness, you were talking about unhealthy choices. Is that correct?
Do you have it before you?
Sure.
Could you quote it to me?
Sure. It says, "A pursuit of happiness is about much more than acquiring wealth or status. It is about being free to do whatever God has called you to do. When a person makes unhealthy choices in the pursuit of happiness, there is nothing government can or should do to make that person happy. There can be no government guarantee of happiness." And I guess my question is when that's why I asked you the question, is whether government, you believe, has a power to stop unhealthy choices
pursuing
happiness.
You're coming from. I think I understand where you're coming from now. No, that's not what I was getting at there. What I was getting at there is that if you make unhealthy choices, you're going to bear the consequence of them. If I eat badly and get fat, then it's my fault. I'm going to bear the diseases that come with it. So what I was getting at is the government shouldn't be involving itself in trying to make me happy. If I make the wrong choice and I end up poor, that's my fault. And the government shouldn't take your money and hand it to me to make me happy. If I end up fat, the government shouldn't get involved and, you know, take your money to help slim me down. That's where I was going with that.
Do you believe that diversity in the judiciary is important?
Absolutely.
Thank you. And I'll just follow up on that. I think the The issue is whether you can set aside your own personal political views when you judge the merits of someone stepping forward to be a judge.
Oh, certainly I can. For you know, the one reason I already mentioned was that it'd be impractical to try and push my views through this. The second reason is I think it would be wrong to do that because I don't want judges deciding, you know, what the law should be. I want them to decide, you know, based on what you guys have said the law is and what our founders said the law was. And then the final reason is I'm going to take an oath before stepping onto this commission. And in my oath, I'm going to be swearing that this is in our bylaws. It says, I shall endeavor to prevent political considerations from outweighing fitness in the judicial and public defender nomination process. And then again, the council shall endeavor to prevent political considerations from outweighing fitness in a judicial retention recommendation process. So I'm taking an oath to do that, regardless of whether I think I should impose my views on the candidates. I'm taking an oath not to do that.
And I appreciate you pointing that out. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The whole issue is we want to get a qualified judiciary and a judiciary that's not biased in any way and is of the highest caliber. I happen to think we have a very good judiciary. Let me just ask you this. Do you believe that there are Alaska judges who are activist judges, as you would define activist?
I'm trying to think of... I can't think of any, you know, off the top of my head, who've been activists.
Senator Wilkowski.
Are there decisions that have been issued by the judicial system that you consider to be activist judicial decisions?
Well, again, I don't see how that would apply to this position, because I'm not going to influence their decisions. I guess if I saw a candidate that I thought for some reason was going to be activist, that something they said seemed to imply that they wanted to, that the reason they were applying was because they wanted to change the law, then yeah, I would probably vote against them based on that. But to be honest, I can't see any candidate being that blunt about what their intentions are, so I probably wouldn't even know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it'd be helpful for us if you could give us maybe a few examples of the types of decisions that you would think would be activist decisions. In other words, if an applicant came before you, I imagine there would be some sort of vetting process, and you would ultimately decide whether or not to move their name forward. And what sorts of things would you deem to be activists that would make a judge unqualified to sit on the bench?
Boy, I don't know on the state level. I guess the biggest one I can think of is on a federal level. I think Roe versus Wade was definitely activist. And even Justice Ginsburg, who's known to be a liberal justice, has accused the court of biting off more than they could chew in that decision. I think that was certainly a decision better left to the electoral process. So things like that, things where the judiciary would make up a new right that wasn't plainly obviously there, something that hadn't been found since statehood. Those would be the types of things.
Mr. Hayes, let me ask you whether you would be willing to forward on to the governor the name of a judge who was otherwise qualified but who supported a woman's right to choose.
Oh, certainly. And one reason for that is what I said, the chance that that particular judge would ever decide on an abortion-related case is very slim. I want somebody who's qualified to deal with minor crimes, you know, traffic crimes and drunkenness, those types of things. Somebody who's very empathetic, somebody who's very knowledgeable about the law. Those types of qualities are what I'd be looking for in a judge. And any one particular issue wouldn't be enough to disqualify them by any means.
Sure, and I think... You know, you've got a good grip on how the system works. You know, most judges are going to be district court judges doing lots of traffic and criminal matters, superior court judges doing, you know, family law matters or complex civil litigation. But you will probably during a six-year term, if you're confirmed and put on this commission, during your six-year term, you'll have the opportunity to shape the field of candidates who would be seated on the Alaska Court of Appeals and the Alaska Supreme Court. And those questions come before the Supreme Court on a regular basis, parental notification, choice issues, and so forth. Will not be handled rarely. They'll be handled annually by those courts.
Well, taking that into consideration, then yes, the answer is yes to your first question that their one belief wouldn't trump all their good qualifications. I would still forward their name.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Hayes? I want to turn to Senator Wilikowski and then Senator Pascoe.
No, I don't.
Oh, Senator Pascoe.
If, Mr. Hayes, if you were confirmed and were seated on the Judicial Council, do you believe it is appropriate to commit that you would not work to change the Constitution as to its current practices as to the Judicial Council?
Certainly. I could easily commit to that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
I know that you have, you're going to ask a question about an area issue.
I am.
I understand that. Help me understand, do the non-public members get the same type of scrutiny from a Judicial Council selectee that a public member like this does get?
We will turn to Mr. Cohn, who can tell us
just
what the vetting process. You know, I don't know what process the Chief Justice is seated.
I can think of about 30 questions now that I'd like to ask him.
You mean the non-attorney members?
No, the attorney members.
Oh, okay. Oh, the attorney members. Yes. You can join the Bar Association.
Is that how it works?
I'm just curious. We'll have to find out from Mr. Cohn. I've never participated in it. Don't know the first thing about it. But they somehow appoint three attorneys to serve on the commission. Why don't we go ahead and do that? Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Stand by. We're going to turn to Larry Cohn from the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council. Go ahead, and if you can hear me, put yourself on the record, and we've got a few questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Larry Cohn. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, and I was requested to be available to answer questions today, which is why I called in. As to the appointment of attorney members of the council, that's done by the Board of Governors under our Constitution. That task has been delegated to the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association. I've never been privy to that appointment process. I do know that they, to assist them in their decision, well, my understanding of how the process works is they solicit applicants from among the bar, and they solicit them by judicial district because of the Constitution's requirement for geographical diversity. So, for example, if there's an opening in the 3rd Judicial District, they will send a notice around to all of the attorneys in the 3rd Judicial District and request solicit applicants. When they have the applicants, I do know that they send out a poll to attorneys within that judicial district for feedback as to the qualifications of those attorneys. And then they meet with the benefit of that poll and make an appointment. But as to, you know, what criteria they apply, I've never been privy to that actual kind of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, it would be interesting to me. This is the second time I've gone through a process like this, and it would be interesting to find out what kind of polling those appointed members get, because I did not anticipate the line of questioning that happened today, but it stirred me to think that that's probably a valuable line of questioning.
I've become curious myself, and I will join you in trying to find out more from the Board of Governors of the Bar Association about what process they use to vet their appointments to the Judicial Council. Mr. Cohn, but no, I called you and asked you to be here today because when I read through the description of the qualifications for membership in the Judicial Council, there was a language about area representation. I wanted you to tell us about what the history is of that, what it means, and what the history of that qualification is with respect to the non-attorney members, the public members, like Mr. Hayes, and what the meaning of that phrase is. So why don't you just go ahead, and then we'll follow up with questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have in front of me, I could pull it up as I'm talking, the exact phrase in the Constitution, but the phrase is something to the effect that appointments shall be made with due regard for area representation to ensure some type of geographical diversity on the council. And when you review the Constitutional Convention minutes, it seems pretty clear that the framers' intent in that regard was to ensure familiarity with local applicants and local judges, that there would be a person appointed who would be familiar with the legal culture and the applicants and the judges within that judicial district. And it is also a benefit to the council to have a diversity of viewpoints to the extent that geographical diversity contributes to a diversity of viewpoints on the council. Historically, the council has had a geographical diversity over its 52-year history. I don't know if you had any more particular questions for me than that.
Well, it's a large state. You know, sometimes people say it's a state with six regions, with three regions. You know, how do you, I mean, there's four judicial districts. How have you seen that idea of area representation apply? And, well, let me just ask, how long have you been executive director of the council?
I've been executive director of the council for nearly 10 years.
Okay, and how have go ahead.
And, well, in my experience, we've had representatives on the council from the first, third, and fourth judicial districts. And geographical diversity is commonly understood to mean within the judicial districts because, among other things, for retention purposes, voters in a district only vote on the judges within their judicial district. So that's the way it's been traditionally interpreted. We have not had, to my knowledge, members from the second judicial district, which is very small in terms of court locations, court cases, and attorneys. The second judicial location, the three principal venues are Nome, and Kotzebue, and Barrow. But we have had, not only during my term as executive director, but historically, diversity from the other three districts. The position to which Mr. Hayes has been nominated was previously occupied by Christina Williams, who's from Ketchikan. And we have had a public member from Southeast Alaska, from the first judicial district, on the Judicial Council for all but 2 years in the 52-year history of the council, and it has been, I think, more than 25 years. It was in the early 80s where there was a 2-year gap where we had no public member from the first judicial district. We do currently have an attorney member from the first judicial district, and that would be Julie Willoughby.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Cohn about the meaning of area representation and the distribution of the members? Or other questions?
Just if,
Senator Passman.
Mr. Hayes, if that's appropriate at this time.
No other questions for Mr. Cohn? Thank you, Mr. Cohn, for being here. Senator Passman and Mr. Hayes, all right, if you're still on the line, we have another question for you.
Sure. It's
yes.
The question is kind of two parts. Why did you not include your role as president of Eagle Alaska or Eagle Forum Alaska on your resume? And that website currently indicates that it's closed for maintenance. Is there a thought to reopen it after you've gone through this process?
The reason it wasn't included is because I don't believe I was even the president when I filed my application. I had first applied for this position when Kathleen Tompkins Miller was appointed, and then my application was still on file when this appointment came up. So that's why it wasn't listed. Like I said, I was only president for a couple of months, and then I resigned as soon as I got the call that, this position might be available. What was the second part?
Well, how long have you been
at... Oh, the website.
No, how long have you been a participant with Eagle Forum Alaska? In other words, I understand you're trying to limit it to the 2 months, but a resume goes back, you know, for years. And so how long have you been a participant in Eagle Alaska Forum to the point you advanced to be the president?
I'm not sure exactly when I signed on, but it was sometime 2005 or 6, I would imagine. And it's...
And my question,
you also had asked about the website?
No, my question
that's
was...
That's been down for over a year, I'm sure.
Well, I think it was since March 11th of this year, but or last year. But anyway, the question is why you did not include your role in Eagle Forum Alaska on your resume, including your being president of that?
I guess I didn't see it as significant as far as being on it. As far as being president, I wasn't. Like I said, I wasn't president, so I wouldn't have included that.
Okay.
I don't think I mentioned that I'm also a chairman of my church board as well, and have been probably about the same time frame. Just trying to think what else.
Yeah, is there thought at this time to reopen the Eagle Forum Alaska website in the future?
I don't know. It became too much maintenance is what the problem was. And you have two different things. There's the website and there's the blog. And the website, I wasn't maintaining that one. The former president was maintaining, and she stopped maintaining that. I think it's been at least a year ago, maybe with the close of the last legislative session. And the blog has been down. I don't know, you've looked at it more recently than I have. You can see whenever the last post was. It's been down for quite some time. And the reason was it was too much work to maintain. I had stepped in to try and help her in maintaining it for a couple of years. We weren't getting a whole lot of response out of it. You can see, you know, if you're looking down all the posts, they all have zero comments in response to them. So it became a point where it was just too much work for the little bit that we thought people might be looking at it.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other questions. We're going to hold this nomination over. I just want to take a deeper look into the area of the question of area representation. Mr. Hayes, thank you so much for being here today. And yes, sir.
Could I address that briefly before you talk?
Sure, absolutely. Yes, please.
I understand your concerns, and I'm glad that you're bringing that up. Valdez has never had representation on the council, nor has any other community in Prince William Sound. I'm talking Cordova, Chenega, Chetitlik, or Whittier. None of these towns have ever been represented. So my appointment would broaden the representation on this commission. I did look into the numbers because this question also came up in the House Judiciary Committee. And the Southeast, which is Judicial District 1, has had 24 people on it since statehood. I'm in District 3, which includes Anchorage, has had 23 people. So this brings us even with the Southeast. The Fairbanks District, District 4, has had 20 people. So like Mr. Cohen had said, of those three judicial districts, it's pretty even, 20, 23, and 24. And also, like he said, the second judicial district of Barrow and Kotzebue has only had two appointments in history. So I think, you know, my appointment is certainly in line with balance, geographic balance.
Thank you. Thank you for that statement, and I appreciate your views on that. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, we'll adjourn.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I had signed up to testify as a member of the public.
Oh, okay. And I'm sorry, who is this?
Terry Miller in Ketchikan, Alaska.
Oh, okay, Terry. I thought you were a reporter. I beg your pardon. We'll go ahead and go back on the record. And about which nomination do you wish to testify?
The Alaska Judicial Council.
Okay, Mr. Hayes?
Correct.
Yes, go ahead and we'll give you 3 minutes to put yourself on the record, state your name and affiliation, if any, and tell us your views.
Perfect. Thank you very much. My name is Terry Miller. I'm the managing editor of the Ketchikan Daily News, although I am testifying both as to the editorial position of the newspaper and to my own views. My single concern coming into this was Mr. Hayes' location. We do believe, and I do believe, that the geographical representation is very significant to Southeast Alaska. And while I sympathize that Valdez hasn't had a member on the Judicial Council, a public representative on the Judicial Council, people from Valdez can easily get to Anchorage. People from Southeast can't easily get anywhere. If we don't have representation on the council misses getting to know the people in Southeast whom they're judging, and we miss the opportunity to offer any judgment at all on those who will be judging us. I think it's a very significant lapse if the Southeast seat were not maintained on the public side, as well as the constitutionally mandated seating of someone from Southeast on the attorney appointments. Thank you for coming back into session to hear that little talk.
I'm glad I did. Any questions for Ms. Miller? I don't see any. I appreciate your taking the time and listening and waiting patiently for a long time to have your views heard. With that, we are adjourned.